They say everyone has a book inside them, and often that's where it should stay. I really can't help but be aghast that the author wants you to pay. But we're just a pair of absolute bookends, you don't want to be like us. So if you want to read, pick some quality literature rather than this dross.
Hello, welcome to Two Absolute Bookends, where we read books so bad you should burn them before reading. This is episode 35, and here with me this week, getting hung up for failing me yet again, is Louis.
Hello.
This time, we're reading Chapter 4 of The Way the Stars Fall Rebirth by Lewis Stockton. Please support the original author. So, this was a short one, wasn't it, Louis?
Mm-hmm. Three and a half pages in my book, which is obviously different to your book.
Yeah, because my one's double-spaced, just because. I don't know why we do these things. These things happen to us, but here we go. So, I know we say this every time, but this one really actually might be really short. I know how let down you'll all feel having waited for so long since the last upload. I don't know how you'll contain your sadness, but we'll try and keep it snappy and strong. Whatever that means. Anyway, so, I mean, God. And I guess the summary of this chapter is going to be Tiberius floats through space back to meet the Imperator, has a bit of banter with his work wife, goes to see the Imperator, and the Imperator's like, ah, you're a naughty boy, you shouldn't have let the ship go, even though you couldn't have stopped it if you wanted to. Go out and get it again. There's a good Tiberius. And Tiberius is like, phew. Then he flies off with his to try and find the Tranquility again, but worries because his fleet's not shit, really, and the Rakari are coming. And, yeah, that's the chapter, I'd say. Not much happens.
Yep.
Even by the not much happens standard that has been set by prior chapters in this epic.
Yeah, this very much seems like a sort of... I don't know if there's like a technical term for it, but it just seems like a very... Well, like you said, nothing really happens, but it's just sort of like a breather almost chapter. Like, I don't know, literally nothing happens. But enough happens for it to sort of advance the plot, but it's just like a little interlude almost. We've had some quite heavy chapters recently, though, with a lot of combat and stuff, so...
Yeah, there's been a lot happening, you know. There's been commando action down on the planet with Jack and his magnificent G.I. Jake.
And I'm going to say something about this chapter, which I think will surprise you. It's the first time I'm going to say this, and maybe the last. Mm. I actually think this chapter was not that bad.
Like, okay.
So... When you finish reading the chapter, my immediate thought was that was actually semi competently written. I thought, there's obviously the odd spelling mistake here and there, which is just we come to accept.
Yeah, a couple of random capitalizations I spotted,
but there were moments throughout where I was like, okay, this is fine. This is like a book. And the way it ends, I don't know what it is about the way it ends, but like that last paragraph and the way it ends of like next time they might not be so lucky. There's just something about it that it worked.
I think the thing is because that is actual like foreshadowing from the voice of a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's internally consistent in the world. Like if we look back so many times, it's been like this random narrator voice saying, ho ho, but they won't be so lucky next time. And but little do they know the Rakari are growing as we speak. But here it's Tiberius's thoughts. Tiberius is sitting there like thinking about everything that's just happened. And I mean, and as you say, when you cut away all of the bad writing, just look at the actual story beats. He has had a shit fucking few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
So maybe I've had my expectations set so low that when there's this mildly decent part, I'm like, huh, that's great. I don't know, it just caught me off guard about how, like, I actually... There were parts during this chapter, which I'll talk about as well, which just felt... Yeah, semi-competent is the best compliment I can give. So, well done.
You know, actually, I actually think that I agree with you now that you've framed it that way. I mean, obviously, we'll go through it more in detail as we go through the chapter, but like, I'm not sure if I ever would have gone as far as phrasing it that way if you hadn't, like, put the thought in your head. But now you've mentioned it, I can think of, like, some actual, you know, decent characterization and stuff. And just, as you say, like, how it does kind of progress things. So you've sold me to the idea that this chapter was if not good, at least a step up from what we've been used to.
Yeah.
You definitely have. Even though, as we've already gone at lengths to explain, this is a chapter where not much really happens. I mean, again, I guess as you mentioned up, that is also kind of functional because of all of the action and danger we've had. You know, now we just sort of like we have this chapter of like just quiet downtime of Tiberius worrying and expecting to be killed when he gets back home. And then finally being sent off onto an equally unrealistic mission. It's just like, I know, this sense of quiet hopelessness as he's like, well, shit.
I mean, it sort of proves quite an important lesson, really, is in that, like, it doesn't particularly matter about what's happening, but more, I don't know, like, this is the first time, as you said, we had, like, sort of character progression and sort of just decent settings and I don't know what else, but it doesn't need to be filled with, like, chock-a-block action for it to be a good story. You can move along at a certain pace and...
I mean, it does help that Tiberius is a more interesting character than Jack.
Yep. Like, he's not just someone that you instantly disregard as a human being, as, like... But, yeah.
Yeah, I guess let's get into going through it proper. We have a correctly formatted, like, byline for a change. The dog reports to the master. So, sets up what we're getting. We know we're heading back to the Imperator.
See, even that tagline is not as garbage as some of the other ones.
You're right. I mean, it's not original, but at least it does make sense.
Yeah, and it's not like some weird sentence.
Unlike some of them that are either like word salads or just don't make any sense with what happens in the chapter. You know, that's the thing. Like usually, we get one of these. If we bring one of these up, we spend 5 minutes talking about what it could actually fucking mean. And here we're just like, yeah, that actually makes sense. That's relevant to what happens in the chapter.
So I think, from what I can remember and tell, that this chapter starts with them after the last chapter where they had that fight with Jack
and the Rikari.
Yeah. And they're approaching back into Imperial space.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to pick up messages, apparently, as they travel through real space, whatever that is.
I mean, I guess that's even more confirmation that they do indeed have, like, light space / hyperspace. I mean, because they haven't gone into any details about it, but apparently there is, like, that layer of abstraction that does fill us in, that they can move just like kind of moving through space like we would, just like with thrusters, like at regular speeds, and then they can do something, some kind of warp jump or warp speed that means they go stupid quick between systems. Which, I mean, again, means I still don't know what the fuck the warp drive that Tona brought onto the ship at the beginning even does. That's still never been explained. I mean, I know that it let them go through the wormhole, but that wasn't how it was described at the start of the book. Whatever. We're past that now.
So, as they're approaching the Imperial space, there's a bit here where it says, after the destruction of the insurrectionist headquarters, the insurrectionists were panicking, were sprouting up all over the place of the Imperium, blah, 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 doing terrorist attacks. The reports drifted through the fleet as they neared Ilmaria. Almost 25% of the Ilmarian fleet left and joined the insurrectionists. What does that mean?
I mean, I guess it means that, you know, the loyalist fleet, like a quarter of them have defected over to join the insurrection.
Even though I would have thought if the insurrectionist headquarters had just been destroyed, they would be losing people. But
yeah, I know, that is kind of kind of messed up. It's like they're at their weakest ebb, you know. They're, as you say, their home base has been destroyed, their leader has been killed, I assume. I mean, we never actually saw her die, but given that that insurrectionist fleet was totally fucked by the Rakari before, I think we're meant to assume that she's dead. But I mean, I guess as we never see the corpse, she could still turn up in the later books. But yeah, it is weird. I sort of understand insofar as, you know, this maybe the insurrectionist cells have decided that, you know, this is like squeaky bum time, and it's like if they don't do it now, it's never. So they've all like pulled in all their favours. And you've got to remember that Tiberius had a significant part of the fleet and he was AWOL. So everyone else may have been like, this is our chance. This is, you know, they've tracked down the base. If we don't do our power play now, they'll just clean us all up, you know, with information they might have about this, about us all in the base or stuff like that.
So is Tiberius an insurrectionist?
No.
Okay.
Why did you think that?
Because I have no fucking clue what's going on. Like, I don't... It doesn't help that everything begins with I. Like, so the Ilmarian Empire...
Yes?
I thought they were the good guys.
No. No. Maybe.
Who's the big guy? The good guys?
The good guys are the people literally don't exist in this universe.
Right.
But they're the people that Jack worked for, the Ilmarian Republic, back in his universe. The bad guys are the Ilmarian Imperium, with the Imperator, who we meet in a bit and who Tiberius works for.
Mm-hmm.
And also Fat Ass Vargas, can't forget him, he works for them too.
And the insurrectionists are the, like, terrorist cell.
Yeah, they're like... Yeah. They're like, you know, Star Wars, they're like the rebels, but pretty much explicitly evil, as well as the people they're rebelling against.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got that clear.
But yeah, this kind of... So, it sounds like that the insurrection is pretty fucking up the Imperium. Like, it doesn't sound like they're winning per se, but it sounds like this is, like, their big chance. They are quite... hitting them hard at this time. So it kind of makes me wonder why the insurrectionist leader did something as retarded and quixotic as tracking down Jack to kill him for revenge, when she could have been, you know, actually leading this rebellion. She could have, you know, linked up with this 25% of the fleet that broke off and be like leading them, as well as not having wasted all of her ships attacking the Tranquility, who she both knew is way powerful and who literally had no interest in any of her problems. It's just retarded, basically. I have no idea why she didn't just go, well, fuck Jack, I hope I never see him again, but let's go back, you know, let's try and rebuild the insurrection after the Imperium managed to track us down. Yeah. She dumb.
So then we come on to the first sort of sticking point for me, which I find a bit weird, is that he mentions that when they... So they're obviously on their way to see the Imperator.
Yeah.
And he's saying that he's got a hard choice to make, either telling the Imperator what had happened to the fleet or have the Imperial spies get access to his logs and tell the Imperator that he failed. Well, I mean, first of all, both options are exactly the same. Like, I don't know why it's such a hard choice for him.
I mean, I think that... I mean, yeah, you're right. There is no choice.
Yeah. As it says here, both carried the fate of death or torture.
Yeah, and as he... And, like, Amelia, his work wife, is like, so what are you going to do? What are you going to tell them? And Tiberius is like, I don't know, the truth. Either way, they'll find out.
Yeah, brilliant.
So it's like, I can't. If it wasn't for the fact that he framed it as a hard choice, I wouldn't have a problem with this. Because otherwise, it would just be underlining how he's kind of fucked. Either way, you know, it's like, you know, do I want to be drowned or burnt to death? Kind of a Hobson's choice. But
the problem I have with it though is that, like. He brings up the fact that there's spies on his ship, and that it's obvious that there's spies on his ship, but I feel like that's a missed opportunity throughout previous chapters to explore that. Like, why is it now just suddenly like, there are definitely spies on the ship? Oh, okay, like, we're just going to accept that now for the benefit of the plot or something?
Yeah.
That could have been an interesting, like, you know, series of unfortunate events in previous chapters of, like, him having to deal with spies on his in his fleet. But now it's just suddenly like, oh, also there's spies on there.
Yeah. I also think that it's kind of a little inconsistent with how he behaves. Like, he's been quite openly, you know, not like, you know, less than enthusiastic about his support for the Imperator and what they're doing while running the ship. You know, like, I distinctly remember, I forget, a decent amount of chapters ago where you know, it's like, he gave, like, a really half-hearted praise the Imperator and, like, didn't salute and shit like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't making a good public face for someone that knew he was under constant scrutiny. And he's also made some, like, you know, all of his, if he knew that his conduct was going to get back, like, him being, like, a bloodthirsty idiot in how he treated his men doesn't sound like great information that he wants getting back either.
Yeah, it just seems like a bit of a weird thing to suddenly be like, oh yeah, there's definitely spies as well.
Yeah, it's just, I say it's, yeah, I really think that if he was that aware that he was, you know, his moves were being, like, under constant scrutiny from people who were more on the Imperator's side than him, that he didn't act, like, more exemplary. You know, he didn't put on more of a show of it all, but he just kind of seemed to be, you know, he was following his orders in general, but he was sometimes gone about them in slightly odd ways that, you know, probably if he's right about the spies, wouldn't, like, stand him in the best stead when it reaches the Imperator. But I don't know. Yeah, you're right. They could have done something interesting with the fact that Tiberius is, like, the head of a fleet that he knows is full of people willing to sell him out at a moment's notice. But nah, just accept it.
And there's a bit here where he's, when he's debating what he should do, it says, Tiberius sighed and rubbed the bridge of his nose. When I first read that, I read it as rubbed the bridge of its nose, and I thought it was talking about the bridge, like, that their ship is sitting in, and there was some sort of weird nose there. I thought, what? You're just rubbing, like, a panel or something.
It's like, there, ship. I gotcha.
But no, he's just rubbing his nose.
Yeah, that's more normal. That's more acceptable. Yeah. Like, I don't really understand what, you know, like, Amelia's like, I'm sure he'll understand why you had to leave. I just hope he understands you helped the battleship get away. It's like, he didn't really. It's not like he was aiding the Tranquility or anything, unless you count not just blindly attacking the Tranquility while it was trying to save them as helping it. I mean, even then, when they, like, kind of declared a truce and head off, that still wasn't helping it escape.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess I'm just being
pedantic,
but...
also, based on our knowledge of how OP the Tranquility is, it's probably the first actually competent decision anyone's made in this book to not attack the Tranquility. If he had tried to attack them, it would have been foolish.
Oh yeah, it would have just completely wrecked his ship. I mean, like, I did mention in the last episode, if he should have, like, had some ship left to actually trail it or mm-hmm. something, so that they're not just, again, searching for one ship throughout the entire universe again, starting from pretty much zero. I mean, that's one thing that I would call him on. But yeah.
He's not perfect, but
yeah, he's no Hollister.
I like how when he goes down towards the Imperial Palace in the shuttle, he takes like a paper report with him. Why is it paper in this day and age? Even in, like, literally present time right now in our life, we have things like tablets and stuff. Why would he be taking a paper report? It just seems so odd.
Yeah, I mean, they do this a lot just to show how backwards, like, the evil Imperium is, even though it's inconsistent when you have things like tannoys and fucking lamps on the Tranquility.
He did take down an disk, though.
Ah, and whole disk.
I bet it was an floppy disk.
That's what I'm imagining, too.
And disk.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure how they've made this spacefaring empire with such low technology.
It's funny, like, imagine. Yeah. It's funny you mention, like, all the lamps and stuff. Later on, we get a fucking fireplace. Leather chairs.
That's more okay, though. Because
still funny, though.
It is kind of funny, but that one's more excusable, as it's like, the pampered ruler of the universe, or, like, in his own room on a planet.
I just imagine him in, like, a red smoking jacket. Good evening.
Yeah. I was kind of imagining him wearing, like, Pope clothes, but yeah.
With a pipe.
Good evening.
Is this the first time we see the Imperator? No, it's not, is it?
Nah, Tiberius had a chat with him over dinner when he was thinking about stealing the forks.
Of course. How could I forget?
I know, right? Oh, dear.
It'd be interesting. I'm not going to do it because it can't be asked, but it'd be interesting to go back to that chapter and, you know, see how the Imperator is portrayed and see whether it is, you know, accurate. Like, whether he is also, like, because in this chapter he seems to be quite a sort of soft-spoken, calm, but sort of evil man.
Yeah, from what I remember, I'd say that's pretty consistent. Like I was going to bring this up, because the portrayal of the Imperator seems quite different from how everyone, like, talks about him.
Yeah, everyone talks about him, like, as being this, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Tiberius asks the guard, "Is the Imperator in a good mood today?" And he replies, "The Imperator is always in a good mood," which of course meant he wasn't. He always seemed angry or distraught at something.
And then is in good mood.
Yeah, is actually in a good mood. You know, he's just, you know, he's incredibly chill about everything, considering, like, his empire's rife with rebellion and Tiberius but fucked up his task royally. To be fair to Tiberius, his task was pretty much impossible, mm-hmm. and we knew that when the Imperator gave it to him, but he did still fuck it up. But yeah, and I kind of, and Tiberius is expecting his head to get put on a spike, Amelia's needling him that he's not going to come back alive. And, you know, and the same kind of thing happened the first time we met him. You know, Tiberius is like, "Oh shit, I don't know why the Imperator wants to have lunch with me. This can't mean anything good. He must have heard about how I fucked up X or Y." Just like, you know, and then the Imperator's just like, "Tiberius, I likes you and I wants you." And he's just like, you be like, run a quarter of my fleet and go and chase after this ship for me and do this really important thing. Meanwhile, Tiberius is sitting there like, he's going to kill me. Ah, I need to steal forks. It's like, you know, it's just so that the Imperator just seems so much more reasonable than everyone acts like he is. He's like written like, yeah, kind of creepy and evil, you know. He does just still, like, end up going, "Yeah, if you fail me, I'll fucking kill you, though, you know. Don't fuck this up." But he still just seems so much more polite and nice than they describe him. They make him sound like he's going to be some screaming, like, madman.
Yeah, he fucking goes on fishing trips.
I know.
So, yeah, that when he goes into the office or whatever, his inner sanctum is described. Yeah.
His homely inner sanctum.
Yeah, it says it's laced with golden jewels, but seemed more homely. It was as if this part was his real home. Photographs of his life before becoming Imperator, fishing trips, holidays, all showed the Imperator was human, or at least had been. There's something funny about You know how most times people use the rules of three when giving examples of stuff? Maybe that's more of a comedy thing, but just the fact that there's like two things. And holidays, you could argue that a fishing trip is a holiday, but anyway. I just like that image of him like holding up a fish or something. And I like to imagine him like in his like Imperator clothing and stuff.
Yeah, at the same time. Yeah. Yeah. He's just like there in like a red robe holding up a fish. But he's like wearing one of those fishing hats with all the hooks in it too.
And on the holidays one, he's like on the beach on like a deck chair in his robe but with like sunglasses on.
And like holding one of those like mirrors to help you sun yourself, but he's just wearing the robe.
Well, like, I was going to say holding just like a margarita or something with an umbrella in it. But yeah, he was human.
Or at least had been. How can you... I mean, I guess I was just going to be needlessly pedantic. It says that Tiberius bows his head slowly and stood at attention. I'm like, how can you both bow and stand at attention? I'm guessing we're meant to assume he did one then the other.
Yeah.
I guess. And the Imperator is sat on a large leather chair in front of a roaring fire, sir. A roaring fire.
Again with the leather chairs.
Yeah. Some serious, like, chair fetish on in this book.
See, it's weird because I'm imagining this, like, you know, den type lounge area, but I can't imagine it with, like, golden jewels as well. It's a weird picture. I want to be there. I want to see it.
Yeah, I guess... I guess you just have to, like just imagine like a really kind of opulent living room, you know. It's like there's a fire, but there's like paintings on the walls and gold candlesticks to the side, but you know, there's all this stuff surrounding it and pictures, a massive photo of him with a fish.
Maybe this is not correct for me to say, but it might also be, I don't know, but I find it weird that he's not greeted. You know how when like the rest of the Imperial people, when they like leave each other, they salute or whatever and say long live the Imperator or something. Why does he not greet and like leave the Imperator the same way like people did with, say, Hitler or something, you know? You would salute Hitler and, you know, when you leave and stuff. I don't know. I think by the sounds of it, Tiberius is quite friendly with him. Like, he's one of the few captains that he trusts. I think he's actually said.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely seems to be the case. I mean, like, in a minute he's like, you're one of my best captains. I plan for you to be chief of staff one day. So, yeah, like it's quite... Which, again, makes it weird that in the first chapter where Tiberius is meeting him, he's, like, so terrified that the Imperator's going... He's bringing him to this dinner to, like, ruin his life somehow. Like I say, it's like... They act like a lot of stuff has happened with the Imperator that's just never shown. Like, he always seems to be, like, so nice to Tiberius. It's weird.
Yeah. And, I mean, speaking of... being overly pedantic in your... How can you bow and stand at attention? What's sitting at attention?
I don't know. I guess just sitting up really straight.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like legs together and hands on them. Like, you know, the reclining is at a complete minimum.
As if you were sitting in like a kneeling chair or something.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. But I don't think you... I guess it would be a good chair to sit in to stand to attention. Yeah, it could work.
I like how he says, the Imperator says that it's too late for him to get into military affairs tonight. Too late for that.
Yeah.
No military affairs after 11.
Exactly, man. If you're Imperator, you gotta wind down, you know. You can't be all military all the time. Exactly. He'll be lying there in like his giant bed, you know, and just be tossing and turning
in his Imperator pajamas.
His big red. Yeah, they're all red and covered in M's.
Silk, yeah. With like a little nightcap.
Yeah, like, Tiberius, I can't sleep, get me warm milk.
And apparently he has a manservant.
I mean, I'd be surprised if he didn't. Big ol' imperator like that.
What's the difference between a manservant and a servant? Is there a difference? Why?
Well,
is it sexual?
No. I mean, I think the obvious thing is that one is a subset of the other.
Yeah.
Basically, like a manservant is a servant, obviously.
I just wondered if there was like if the term manservant meant something or like.
Yes. I mean,
With Peter.
Yeah, that is kind of like a distinct class of servant who, like, you know, like, they're not, like, they're specifically not butlers. That's a very different type of personal servant, though there's kind of a little bit of overlap. But yeah, they're basically manservants would be the kind of people that, you know, like, you know, posh young men would have had, like, back in the day if they were of that kind of bent, and they'd sort of, like, just be there to run interference for them on everything. You know, they'd lay out their clothes in the morning, they'd shave them, they'd be the ones to bring them their breakfast and
would
get everything
ready for
them. Would
it be fair to say that a manservant is more of a servant to the individual person's needs rather than like a servant that might be just working on the grounds or something?
Yes, I think that'd be a very good way to describe it, actually. I would agree. Like, you know, like, yeah, as you say, like you know, a butler serves the house, mm-hmm. but a manservant, they will go with this person wherever they go and serve their needs wherever that happens to be. You know, like Jeeves, the famous butler from P.G. Woodhouse, he was a manservant. Right. You know, he was there to run interference for Bertie Wooster and all of his mad hijinks and to save the day for him. Ah. Need to read some Woodhouse. I haven't for a while.
That's got you distracted. Jolly
good fun they have. Yeah, I'm stuck back about 100 years ago now, having a rip roaring time in country houses.
It's like no military affairs at night with you. It's no Jeeves and Worcester at night. Otherwise, you won't sleep.
Exactly. I'll be tossing and turning. Jeeves. Gussie Finknottle's sleepwalking again. Oh, that was a bad dream.
Your parents are just like, shut up, there's no one here called Jeeves. It's 2 a.m. Stop shouting for Jeeves.
Yeah, it's a problem I have. Yeah, so are you happy with a manservant now?
I am. Do you feel cleared that up.
Do you feel ready to traverse the the problems of a Georgian Britain?
I'm sure that's an interesting lecture you can give me one day on the different levels of servants and slaves and whatever. And I think the Roman era might be quite an interesting one to go through. You've probably got a lot to say on that.
I always have a lot to say about the Romans.
They were probably specific people for
bastards.
Specific tasks that had specific names. Fascinating. Splendid.
Simply delicious. Do you know that there was a special job title for people that killed animals and read their entrails back in the Roman Republic?
No.
They were called haruspexes. Mm.
Read their entrails?
Yeah. You know, like astrologers, they read the stars to predict the future and get signs from the gods kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Signs from the gods is more old-fashioned. Now it's generally just predict the future, but, you know, that was a thing.
And fill a newspaper page.
That too. Mostly that now, to be honest. A haruspex did the same thing, but they cut open an animal and, like, spread out their entrails. And depending what they saw inside the animal depends on, has an effect on what they think God wants. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Different times.
But you do that now.
Interesting times.
You're called mental.
Exactly. One rule for Haruspex is in the Roman Republic. Another rule for Peter when he's out trying to find out how his work's going to go.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so Tiberius shows the Imperator, or he explains the report to the Imperator. And this is one of the paragraphs, actually, where it's explained what happened, where I thought, this is actually not badly written. Like, the summary of what happened was, you know, it wasn't full of, like, ridiculous errors and, like, spelling mistakes. And it was just nicely worded. There's no other, like, I'm sure in any other book, any other normal book, it would just go unnoticed as, like, normal paragraph. But in here, it really stood out as, like, I don't know, it just worked.
Stood out as unexpectedly competent.
Yeah. It was just a good summary.
But yeah, I know what you like, I can see what you mean. It does summarise what Tiberius had been up to in the last few chapters pretty well. Puts like his slant on all of the things. You know, it's very specifically a retelling from Tiberius's perspective. You know, it's
yeah.
I think again, it's another case of, you know, it's still just like, you know, a recap. It's just like it's just exposition. But the fact that it's actually being done through a character's lens rather than just being being a random narrator like we usually get does go for miles when it comes to actually, I don't know, giving an iota of like care about the characters involved. It just helps keep you in it, having things go through the characters rather than just a random narrator.
The sad thing is that this one paragraph is better written and more interesting than like the entire chapter that it's summarizing. I'd rather have just had this paragraph. I wish this book was just each chapter but summarized in a paragraph.
I mean, yeah, that's
like 30 paragraphs and it's done.
Yeah, we would have finished a lot sooner. That is one of the interesting things, like when you describe what happens in the book, it does often sound a lot more interesting than actually reading it.
Yeah, it's just the way that it's some things are just drawn out and some things are focused on weirdly and
yeah, it's like, I'm sure that some of the chapter summaries actually sound quite exciting when we describe what happens. Where it's like, ah, oh, there was this commando raid on the alien base. You know, Jack barely escaped with his life. You know, he got airlifted out. But actually reading it is just, it's just always so laughable or boring.
And then the Imperator asks the question that Tiberius did not want to answer. What happened to the battleship? Dun dun dun. He let it go. Yeah. He basically explains to him that they were too damaged to like even fight it, and then also that the captain, there was something strange about him. It was me, or looked like me, he said. He was named Jack Hunter, my middle name.
The Imperator sat up and sighed.
I like how the Imperator doesn't make any. He just like completely ignores that.
Yeah, he gives zero shits about Tiberius's doppelganger. I mean, yeah, like that's kind of weird, actually. Like Tiberius never makes any mention of the fact that it's because he might be from an alternate universe or anything. In fact, I'm not sure if any of them believe that to even be the case.
Yeah, well, clearly not, because otherwise I think he would have said it. Like, he's clearly still confused about what happened. I mean, I'm confused about what happened, so I'm not surprised.
Well, yeah, that's because nothing about the fucking warp engine makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff where, like you said, when you speak about the book in broad terms, it sounds more interesting, but then when you get into stuff like that nonsense, and
when you get into the granular level, you're just like, what the fuck is even, you know, when you just say they travel through a wormhole to another universe, you know, that that sounds like just, you know, generic sci-fi fare, but you're like, yeah, okay, whatever, I'm game. But then when you read about the, you know, just the contradictory and retarded ways they describe it all working, you're just like, what? What's even happening? You know, just it would have been better if they hadn't tried to explain it at all.
Yeah,
kind
basically.
Of thing. Yeah.
But say what you will about the Imperator being not as bad as everyone says, but he's certainly quite. He knows how to get what he wants. Like he says to him, even though you failed here, you know, I'm going to give you a second chance. But if you fail, I'll hang you from the gates. Like he doesn't mess around.
Yeah. He's a real straight shooter, that Imperator.
I like that.
Yeah. But...
speaking and sipping from his drink.
I mean, yeah, like, that is the one thing where you do get the point of what they're talking about him being, like, scary. But even so, he's still just... it's just so muted and understated. He's like, if you don't do it, next time I'll kill you. I mean, like, you know, the threat's clearly still there. He's clearly still, like, a twisted guy. But it's just... I know that... They always I do still find it so incongruous how he gets described and how he acts. Like, you know, from the way it sounds, like it sounded like everyone expected the Imperator would be raging at him and was just going to kill him on the spot. But he's just like, I'm giving you another chance, Tiberius. If you fail me next time, you know, I think that is fine. That is like a evil archetype, but it seems weird that it's. He seems to be a different evil archetype than the one that everyone around him actually describes.
Yeah.
It's just very curious.
I take back what I said. I just saw that when Tiberius leaves, he does salute before leaving. probably begrudgingly. Well, yeah. It's a good point you made earlier. Doesn't he... You said earlier that he seemed quite... like, he didn't really respect the Imperator. He sort of didn't want to salute him or whatever. But here, it does seem that he's quite friendly with him, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's also obviously terrified of him, so he wasn't going to give him a half-hearted salute to his face. But yeah, when he's not around the Imperator, like, when he's just captaining out in the middle of nowhere or talking to Amelia, he seems like, I mean... obviously still scared of his power, but to not respect the man, as you say, but which is weird because, as we pointed out, the Imperator has been incredibly good to Tiberius, aside from the fact that apparently he's so poor he considers having to steal cutlery. But no, like, he's like one of the top captains in the fleet, you know, like the Imperator has like picked him to be his chief of staff. You know, he's giving him a second chance despite failing. I mean, the fact that he even sent him on the Tranquility mission to begin with was an immense display of faith in him. It's odd how much he hates this guy that's basically put him in, like, the top percent of power within the entire Imperium. I mean, I guess on the other hand, those are generally the kind of people that try and overthrow the establishment and undermine them like that. It's not usually just a random peasant, aside from peasant revolts, but that's, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Court intrigue-wise. But yeah, it's funny.
And yeah, so that's pretty much the end of their meeting. And then Tiberius leaves and basically starts preparations for the next attack that they're going to carry out on the Tranquility.
Round two.
Yeah. And then this is where the chapter ends with Tiberius on the ship basically thinking about what's about to happen and how it could all go wrong. There's for all I've said about it being a semi-decent chapter and this ending in particular, there is a weird colloquial use of him being freaked out. I found that odd and out of place. It basically says that relaxing back on his bunk, Tiberius ran his hands over his face, seeing the Rukari ships decimate his fleet and watching the other version of himself on the battleship freaked him out.
Yeah.
It's just, like, so out of place, just something you would say in real life. It's I don't know, confused him or something. Freaked him out, man.
Yeah, as you say, it's something that's just so... like, it's such a colloquialism still, just to say you're freaked out. It seems...
it just takes you
so
out
so weird. Yeah, it's like... you know, he should have said something like, it had unnerved him deeply, or something like that. You know, or even just something like, had left him shaken, or just anything like that. Uh-huh. But just freaked out is just, yeah, it's an odd choice of words, given Tiberius's character. Like, I'm just trying to imagine this grizzled, evil captain there being like, oh, zoinks, Scoob, it freaked me out.
Who's the scrappy do in this book?
Toner.
I like Scrappy. I don't get the hate.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe I don't remember, because, like, when I wasn't, like, a critique as a child or anything. I wasn't,
yeah,
like
don't get me wrong, I will agree that while watching as a child, I don't remember having a specific problem with him.
Yeah.
But per se, like, I can see why he was an annoying character looking back, though.
Yeah.
Because he was just every week, the dude had such delusions of grandeur. He was just like, oh, let me at him. I'll beat him. He's just getting everyone into trouble. He was just a little shit.
He was always doing that, wasn't he? Trying to get them to at him.
Yeah, and he was just a tiny fucking puppy. And, you know, and then Scooby would have to save him and be like, no, Scrappy, and run off with him. Because Scrappy would have gotten flattened. Yeah. I also haven't watched Scooby-Doo in like a decade, so I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate, getting flattened.
He's quite small and weak.
Almost Scrappy.
Delicious.
Splendid. That's actually quite relevant, that video, to this podcast. It's about books.
Yeah, I'll have to link it on Twitter.
Yeah. I love books. That should be the intro music.
Do you think we can get ourselves sponsored by Hope Animation?
I mean, I actually think we could, based on what they're doing.
That might be worth following up.
Also, your intro music is good, but it's not as good as that. Let's use that instead.
It's no Globu Gabulab rap.
I love books. And this
room is a treasure trove. We've rapidly become incomprehensible.
Yeah. We're not sane.
we have problems, but we knew that.
So yeah, if that's I've got nothing else to add about this chapter.
Yeah. I mean, is
an
there
actual
any, is there...
sub-hour episode.
Yeah, that's...
I never thought I'd see the day.
It's been a while. I think we've had some early on. And you got to remember that this is going to get cut out. There was a couple of minutes at the beginning where we were talking about kneeling chairs that are getting cut out.
It is? I thought it would just start with that.
I leave that as the actual, like, cold open.
Yeah.
And then after it's done, I play the theme song. Anyway, enough about kneeling chairs. Everyone has a book inside them. Oh, dear. But, yeah. I wonder what the Imperator was thinking when Tiberius is just talking about his doppelganger. Because, I mean, it's just so weird. Like, it's not like something that Tiberius would lie about, because I don't think he's expecting it would mitigate the situation. It's not like he's expecting the Imperator to go, oh, you met yourself, whatever, well done. It's like, I wonder why Tiberius even decided to pass that on as a piece of information. I mean, I guess because of the spies. I mean, I guess why not? I guess one of them might have been like, in the room were like, yeah, and the captain looked just like Captain Tiberius.
So just to get this clear, they're back now on what where are they in terms of like the universe? Like, what side of the wormhole? So Jack.
Everyone except for the Rikari are back in present day, whatever that means after you introduce time travel, but you know, back in the present on this side of the wormhole.
Okay.
But the Rikari are still on the other side.
But if they're on the present side, why is it still the Tranquility? Shouldn't it change back into transport ship?
No, because this is another reason why that whole thing is just so unimaginably fucked up. Because, again, because when they went through that wormhole, they travelled back in time in the alternate universe, I'm imagining. I guess it's not clear what universe they travelled back into time. Maybe it was a third universe, but also 50,000 years in the past. But for whatever reason, and I don't know why, the warp drive didn't affect the ship this time.
Okay.
I don't know. Hands up. I have no idea. That is the biggest problem with the book, as far as I'm concerned, on a story writing way. Like, first, how the warp drive works to begin with, and second, how time travel works as related to the warp drive and wormholes. You know, those that they just raise so many question marks. It's unreal. But yeah. Are you as clear as we can be on that?
as clear as I'd like to be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think explaining it more is going to help because it literally doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't want any of this explanations before bed. Otherwise, I'll be tossing and turning like Imperator.
Yelling out for Jeeves.
Yeah.
Jeeves. Jeeves.
I yell out for Worcester.
Oh. You don't want to yell out for Bertie. Oh, he'll be no help at all.
That's why he's got Jeeves.
Exactly. He's one of those useless fops from the early 20th century that just like goes around in a farce, like getting drunk and hanging around in country houses.
Sounds like you.
Not dissimilar. I don't have a manservant though. But I don't know how many of those even exist anymore. I'm also not rich enough.
But if you were.
If I were, it'd be great to have a Jeeves. That's the dream.
That's the dream you'll be having tonight.
Exactly. I won't be screaming, I'll be lying like, ah, Jeeves.
Softly smiling. Yes. Actually, that's a good point to mention, that unfortunately, it's with the heavy hearts that we have to mention that there was no chuckles or smirks.
This week, Chuckle Vision is off in its entirety. We're going to have to press F to pay respects to Paul and Barry this week.
Yep, unfortunately, no chuckles and no smirks.
Exactly, it was a sad and serious time, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but yeah, it's...
There is a soft smile, if that's anything.
Yes. Was that from the Imperator?
Yes. Smiling softly.
Hey, see, what a jolly fellow.
Yeah.
I don't understand what everyone's talking about.
Seems like a nice guy. I'd go fishing with him.
Exactly. So unreasonable. This is why he had to kill all those people. They just didn't get him. Anyway, I think we're done. So, to conclude, a halfway competent chapter. Maybe the fact that it was so short also helped us helped us feel better disposed to it. It's hard to tell, but yeah, more like this, Lewis.
Yeah.
Come on. You know, it took us 24 chapters, but we're seeing signs of improvement. Let's see if you can tie it all together by the end. Anyway, any final words, Louis?
No, I think that's it for this chapter.
Fantastic. So, We've been Two Absolute Bookends. Follow us on our social medias where we'll show you the ways of the gobga-glab-galab. And we'll see you next time where we'll be reading chapter 25 of The Way the Stars Fall Rebirth by Lewis Stockton. See ya!
Bye.
Gonna fucking edit that out. I'm gonna edit you laughing out. I'm gonna edit me fucking that up out. And no one except us will ever know.